shore where the mountains meet the sea, in a clapboard shack by a broken down tree. There's a light in the window, two salty gals inside. I'm not sure if they're witches, but you know that's implied. Got the storytelling, ego swelling, pillow talking, moonlight walking, sea hags.
Sea Hags Podcast. I'm Chris Jeppa.
And I'm Katie Norgren, and with us this week is a second-time podcast guest, Total Babe, and finally we have different hair.
Woo-hoo!
It's Red Heartbreaker.
Hello.
Hello.
Welcome back, Red. It's so nice to see you.
It's so nice to be seen and to
better
see
red
that.
Than dead.
Heck yes. That was my first ever, my second ever email address.
Better red than dead?
The first one was the big Redalicious.
Oh, God. Mine was
very high
school. k_nutty@hotmail.com, because I'm like, I'm crazy.
Yeah.
Legitimately, everyone did call me Crazy Katie in my adolescence, and I'm not that crazy.
Oh.
I'm like very medium crazy. Yeah.
I was shorty_99. The 99 was for Wayne fucking Gretzky.
Wayne Gretzky.
Were you super into hockey?
No, not really. I was into that he was Polish. That's why our family loved. We had no allegiance to a team. It's just whatever team Wayne Gretzky is on is our favorite hockey
Excellent.
Team.
Excellent.
That's pretty good. Turns out he's kind of a blowhard conservative, like love Stephen Harper kind of guy.
Yeah.
Which is, and his wine isn't very good.
No, it isn't.
You're on blast, Wayne Gretzky.
Wayne Gretzky's always a little bit on blast.
The Chardonnay is like fine. Fine. It'll
All Chardonnays are fine. You can mix any Chardonnay with a little bit of seltzer and you're like, this is fine.
Honestly, I used to be super duper snobby about Chardonnays. Mm-hmm. And then a couple of years ago, I was like, what's all the hubbub about? What's all the claptrap about this Chardonnay that people are talking about? And I started really getting into it, and I learned that, and there's probably a bunch of wine people that really disagree with me, but there's like a dollar value. There's like one thing which is like the dollar value of a Chardonnay. You get above a certain dollar value and you're like, oh, this is really good. Which is fine. It's just, that's just wine, I guess. But
$20? Or a little more even.
A little more than that. Okay, but on the other side,
because I've had some good.
There's wine more than $20.
I know. It's for special occasions. But on the other side, there's like, if you read the label, and sidebar, why doesn't anybody explain fucking wine on their label anymore?
Yeah.
Like, you read a label and it's like, the terroir is excellent. We're a family that makes wine. The Ooh. End. And you're like, I need...
Tell me what it tastes like.
What is... help! Right?
Yeah, I like it when they say it's like, it has flavors like this and it pairs well with these things.
Exactly.
And it's dry or it's sweet or it's sparkling or it's on fire.
Yeah.
Currently.
Yes. I love that on fire one.
Mineral, whatever.
Spicy. It's too spicy for me.
As soon as you see butter, mm-hmm. or as soon as you see like 12 months in French oak,
yes.
you're like, it's just gonna be good.
This
That's
is
for
the,
Chardonnay
this
notes.
Is the thing. It's
Chardonnay
the,
notes.
It's the oaked, Chardonnay oaked versus unoaked. I think unoaked Chardonnay is hot garbage. It's really not good.
This
really?
One,
yeah.
It's one.
You like it oaked.
Yes. So the Chardonnay that's oaked is like, it's got the vanilla, the cinnamon, the like, not cinnamon, but like, buttery.
If they ever say popcorn, it's a dude.
Yeah.
We're saying oaked or broke, basically.
Yeah.
If you don't like oak, you just don't like Chardonnay, and that's cool.
Yeah.
There's so many other wines.
I want all of my wines to taste like trees.
There is a Chardonnay from
minerals.
Yeah.
There's a Chardonnay from Incomeep Cellars that I think is like one of the best. Yeah. And it wasn't even that expensive. I think it was like $18, but I could never find it anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And it is such a good flavor. And I remember making, I think for you, a little special treat where I made like it was like a cracker with brie and then toasted pine nuts with a little bit of maple syrup on top as the pairing to go with it. And fuck damn, was it ever good.
Fuck
damn.
You
know what? That's some motherfucking friendship right there. You made our friendship pie.
Yeah.
That's what you did.
It's a tiny, tiny pie.
Yeah.
Tiny, tiny
pie. But, you know, you want to treat your best lady.
Fuck yeah. See, you know what? I never understood this thing of people feeling like they should treat their loved ones like crap because they trust each other to treat each other like crap.
Mm.
I feel like you treat your besties like your besties.
Well, we can unload on each other, but we also
I don't think we treat each other like shit ever.
Oh, no. Sometimes it's like, you're my feelings bucket right now.
Yeah.
But there's an understanding and a reciprocity.
We also have boundaries about feelings bucket time, too, because I can say to Katie,
I'm at work, so no.
Yeah, or like, you know, I'm really tired. I do not have the spoons. Like, I don't have the space in my bucket because it's full of my own crap. So
crap bucket.
I need to empty out my own crap bucket first before you can fill it with your crap.
Yeah. Slop it out behind the woodsheds.
Heck
you know?
Yeah.
It's a really gross metaphor.
Throw it on the summer squash.
But feelings are disgusting, so it's cool.
Some friends of my husband's, one friend in particular who shall remain unnamed, when he was growing up, his dad was like, if you have a feeling, you take it, you put it in your feelings box, and you bury that shit in the ground.
Oh, no.
And it came out as they were sort of chatting many years ago, and it's become a sort of, like, shorthand for, like, too many feelings! Throw them in the feelings box! And put bury them in the ground! And there was a, at this point in time, they were ski patrolling, so there was a, like, a suggestion box on the wall that they started labeling the feelings box. So, you know. I always find it kind of funny. You take those feelings, you stick them in a box, and you bury them in the ground.
Like, masculinity is great, and there's no problems with it at all.
I think that when people think about toxic masculinity, that makes a really good, you know, and not that that is toxic, like, but do you definitely have damaging.
It is toxic, though. It's very much.
It's like you have a barrel of toxic waste, and you bury it under the ground, and then no one will ever, it'll be fine. It'll but be it's totally like, fine. That shit leaks, and it poisons everything around it.
Yeah. Hella indigestion of feelings.
Yeah.
Guess you, like, blew a gasket on that this week, and just gushed out a lot of feelings was this guy right over here.
Oh, yeah?
Well, you knew about this. This was like, I went to therapy because I love therapy and it's really good and important after, good. Like, this has been a really, I keep saying everything is a growth year because it makes me feel better about everything feeling like shit.
And this is like a growth season of many years.
But, amen. However, the last 6 weeks, 8 weeks have been this neat mix of challenging and rewarding in such a way that I, like, have felt a little bit healed in some capacities. And so I went to therapy with that in mind, going like, hey, all of these things for me have changed a lot in the last few months because I'm doing things differently. And I just started bawling, like just like leaking, like a constant stream of tears down my face. I wasn't sobbing or anything. It was just like, I can't stop this. This is just like coming out of my face at record speeds. Like I probably went through 25 Kleenexes in a half an hour.
Just let it run, man.
Just letting it rip. And the my counselor was like, this is like a really important moment right now. Like, this is wild for me. Like, I'm here with you experiencing this. And I'm really taken with it. Like, I'm going to be affected by this for a while. And I was like, okay, this is, I don't know what's going, I literally still don't know what happened. It was a very strange, very intimate experience. And I felt very light since then.
That's
like
excellent.
I threw a gunny sack full of gross feelings and
yeah, well, that's the bucket emptying.
but it didn't bury it, you know. Yeah. I just poured it out, like so. Yeah, because it turns out I think maybe you have a limitation on how many buckets you get, and you have to learn to dump them out instead of just putting a lid on them and burying them in the ground because you only have like say 6 buckets.
Yeah,
and if you bury them all, you're gonna die.
Your fuck bucket runneth over.
Yes, I mean? It's no good. This is a very clumsy metaphor, but that was, yeah. So I experienced that as like a, it felt like a bucket of crap was being tipped over and all the crap was coming out. And it felt weird.
If you've ever had like a horrible cyst or like a horrible abscess, I'm patting my arm as if it's in your arm or something, but like if you've ever had an abscess and like the hot, feverish pressure that you just get used to. And then all of a sudden you avoid that shit and it's just like a wave of relief.
When
and
it pops.
And it's disgusting.
That's true, though. It's disgusting. Just like feelings.
Yeah.
But you have to do it.
Yeah. And then suddenly it's just like, oh, all that pressure is gone.
Well, yeah. Did that.
So that's, I've been reading 2 books that were really good. One was, I think, I don't know if I mentioned it last week, but Emily Nagoski's Come As You Are. Have you heard of this book?
No.
Both of you? It's a, it's like a pop science book about, quote-unquote female sexuality. They're very, the author is very upfront about it being like, this is like pretty much a cis woman's book, but it also definitely applies to trans people because all human beings have basically the same matter that makes up their bodies and their genitals. It's just all arranged a little bit differently. So, like, anything could apply to anyone, but here are some, like, cultural developments of behavioral patterns and like emotional patterns and things. So it was very interesting to read, but the one thing that I really took away from the whole thing was that emotional cycles need to be completed. That's the don't bury it. You have to like let the whole feeling happen and not stop it and get to the end of it, and then you can move on. But it's when you stop trying to deal with them that it turns into like long-term trauma, or like things that just will come up and you have no control over, basically.
That
can just like, yeah, it can calcify, get larger, can metastasize, those kinds of things. So that was a really good takeaway. It was just kind of like, hey, when you have feelings and you're having judgments about those feelings, you'll stop, you'll try to stop having those feelings, which means that you'll have those feelings way longer. Mm-hmm. So don't judge yourself, just feel them, get it out, mm-hmm. live your life.
Yeah, I felt that there's been a few experiences this week where it's just like, I just have to say this so that I say it, because otherwise it's like sitting in my chest for a really long time. So yep. then you just say the thing and it comes out and then it's like, oh, great, okay, well then now I'm not mad about that anymore. And even if, like, the other person that hears it doesn't even do anything about it, it's just that it was heard is enough sometimes for it to be like, okay, it's actually not as big of a deal as I thought, but I just had to say it.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, okay. Now it's out in the light and, you know, that kills the mold and all of that. So many metaphors.
Or it's out in the light and if there is a next time that it raises up, it sort of lays the ground for you to say something in the moment instead of reserving your mm-hmm. commentary until you've had a chance to think it all the way through.
True.
I don't know about yourselves, but I have learned after a long time of trying to work on this that my reactive commentary is honest but not constructive. Mm. And my more shaped and mulled over commentary is more constructive but not always as honest. And there's time and reason for both of those things.
Yeah.
But if you can say the thing when you've had a second to think about it and shape it in a way that builds relationship instead of tearing it down, mm-hmm. then the next time if you do have to snap about it or if you do have to say something right in the moment kind of reactively, you can say, that's what I was talking about. Maybe don't fucking do that. And they're like, oh, shit, I'm doing that thing.
That or, is really, really, really
it's
good.
It's layers, yeah. right? Like we think that there's like a one-step plan for things like, that if we have a breakthrough, then we're done. And it's not. It's like millions of layers of sediment of, mm-hmm. you know, emotional foundation, right? I used to see a psychologist who did a thing called EMDR. I can't remember if we talked about this last time.
Not, maybe not with you, but we've talked about it on the podcast.
We talked about it last week, in fact. With
really?
Lauren, or no, she was talking about tapping.
Tapping, yeah.
EMDR has a similar physical thing.
Or
I did a little bit of that after some, anxiety stuff.
Yeah, it's fucking great stuff. I did a year of it once a week, and it's like tectonic shifts in your fucking body. And the whole thing about it is this idea that you only have so much room. And I think it's a really great metaphor for people to think about because they forget the fact that your experience and your emotional... I don't know, your emotional health is cumulative, right? Mm-hmm. You don't get to just say, well, I already had that feeling. I don't want to have it anymore. You know,
you can't, happens. Damn it.
I know, right? Like, you're looking at your punch card, and you're like, fuck this shit. I've already done that. I'm at 10. I'm at 10. I get a free one.
I've had 10 feelings.
Right? Is that meme about the, like, quote, the...
Do you need a pen, my darling?
Katie's running
Katie's
around
just like
pen.
Skulking around. There's one behind you too by the picture frames.
Writing so many pens.
But yeah, like, so the way he explained it is if you have a filing cabinet and your filing cabinet is really designed to have all your feelings and experiences and self-belief and knowledge and experience and physical feedback and all those sorts of things. If you take flat pieces of paper and put them in a filing cabinet, you know, A, you have a way of finding them again. B, they fit. You can fit so many more things into there. And C, you don't, like, they don't kind of get all garbled up and, mm-hmm. and misfiled when you kind of ignore them and put more things in there. Whereas if you take a piece of paper and you ball it into a fucking ball and you walk across the room and you chuck it into an open drawer and maybe it fits in the drawer and maybe it doesn't, it's going to take a very small amount of time for you to get filled the fuck up.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you get to the end of that, shit starts to overflow and that's when you lash out. That's when you have, you know, anxiety bubbling up. It's mm-hmm. when you start to have, you know, triggering moments in your life where you're like, the smell of, you know, Hubba Bubba bubblegum turns me into a fucking wreck, or like one time I remember the smell of Old Spice and now I can't leave the house, or whatever the fuck it is.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a really interesting metaphor to think about that because we think of feelings as these sort of like massless, amorphous, theoretical things. And you're like, no, it's like a geometric thing that you have a certain amount of space for. Everybody's drawer is a little bit different. But when that shit starts to overflow, you have to go in and pick them up. Like anybody who's cleaned out that junk drawer that everybody has.
The drunk drawer.
The drunk, you know, it's also that.
Yeah.
That's my back porch.
Some of us have like one of those drawers. Some of us have like seven of those drawers.
Mm-hmm.
But you open it up and you have to pick up things one at a time and smooth them out and go, where does this go? And that's EMDR. That's you just pick up a thing. you look at it, you have a sort of like, what would you call it?
A neutral physical experience while you're trying to remember it?
Not remotely neutral. Oh, okay. It's one of the most violent physical experiences I think I've ever had.
Wow, really?
Because a cognitive process of it is that you open up the target, we call them targets. You open it up, you look at it, you explain it to your facilitator or psychologist or whatever they are, and they ask you a series of survey questions. And the survey questions are really benign and unloaded. They're, mm-hmm. like, very benign. The questions are, I assume if I can remember all of them, what is the negative self-belief you have about yourself in this situation? Like, if you mm-hmm. could sum it up into a short sentence, what do you think this thing says about you that is negative? What would you rather believe? What feelings are you getting related to that thing? Is it fear? Is it guilt? Mm-hmm. You know, and at the beginning, you have a couple of sessions where you kind of get just a baseline reading of all of your emotions, and you kind of, like, you adjust them like an EQ, which, as a musician, that really appealed to me, the mm-hmm. idea of, like, returning everything to zero as much as you can, mm-hmm. so you can decide how susceptible you are to anger versus susceptible to guilt, susceptible to sadness, susceptible to grief, all those protective emotions. And then you unpack each individual target, you find out what the negative emotions are, what the negative belief about yourself is, mm-hmm. what you would rather believe, if there is a physical manifestation, where you feel it in the body, yeah. and how strong it is from 1 to 10. And sometimes it feels like you're having a fucking heart attack, to be totally honest. Mm-hmm. The first couple of sessions I had, my eyes after it, because it triggers the way that your eyes track back and forth in traumatic experiences and, like, crumple up that ball of the experience yeah. and just, like, shove it in the back of your brain.
It helps
to protect
with the
you.
Like, fight, flight, or freeze, and I'm a freeze person, and that's, like, trying to unlock that frozenness. Is yeah. like, yeah.
So the memory, you explain it to the practitioner and they sort of, like, reflective listen things back to you and they sort of, like, summarize things. And then they say, okay, so just think about that, you know, 7 out of 10 tight feeling you get in your chest and that rolling nausea you have in your belly and feeling that, you know, guilt or that sadness or whatever. And they will either use a finger or some people use a tracking light because you're not really supposed to touch patients. But mm-hmm. in this therapy, you can, like, tap their knees or things like that. I always preferred tapping on the knees and they'll just tap back and forth. And you just think about the experience, like you think about the target that you're thinking of, and as you tap, you start to just randomly daydream, because that's what the mind does. It just, like, thinks of random shit. Mm-hmm. So you're like, okay, this is not a real example, but let's just say it for an example. Trigger warning, this is a very violent image. Let's say you were in a room and you saw somebody shoot your mother in the face. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you think about the experience of shooting your mother in the face. The negative self-belief is, I should have done something. What you would rather believe is, I was a child and it's not my fucking fault. Mm-hmm. Okay? How strong is it? Let's say it's an 8 out of 10. You've got rolling guilt in your gut and your chest feels tight and you can't breathe. So you think about not being able to breathe and how tight that is. You think about the experience. And then something's going to come up and you're going to be like, tap, 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 tap. And he'll pause or she'll pause or they'll pause for a second and go, okay, what'd you get? And you go, I'm remembering the cover of a VHS cassette that has Goonies on it. And you're like, okay, think about Goonies. So you think about Goonies, tap, tap, tap. Think about Goonies, you think about, hey, you guys. You think
about... Truffle Shuffle.
Truffle Shuffle, you think about all those things, and then it reminds you of Stand By Me, and you're like, what are you thinking about? Think about Stand By Me. Okay, think about Stand By Me. So you're thinking about Stand By Me, and you're thinking about Motown music, and then you're thinking about Jackie Wilson's Higher and Higher, and you're thinking about how fucking awesome the snare drum part in that is. And then he goes, what are you thinking about? And you're like, snare drums are fucking dope, especially when they're, like, super small piccolo snare drums. He's like, okay, think about snare drums. Tap, 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 tap. And sometimes it's, like, 5 steps, and sometimes it's, like, 20 steps. And you go tap, 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 and eventually you get back to the room. And so what it does is it tricks your brain into following the trail of breadcrumbs that, if you think about, like, hungry, hungry hippos style, your brain just goes, ah, we can't deal with this shit when you're having that experience. And it just, like, grabs a big armload of sensory information, yeah. packs it up into a rolled up ball, shoves it in a drawer, and you either don't remember all of it or you have it unprocessed and all sorts of things. And so then you get back into that moment and then you can see it happen. And cognitively speaking, it's happening in real time in your mind and in your body. Mm-hmm. So EMDR is insane because you have to actually have the experience again, mm-hmm. which is what makes it really very, very difficult, because if you were in the room and your mom got shot in the face, at whatever age, you're going to be in the room and your mind and your body are going to be like, yeah, I'm watching my mom get shot in the face again, mm-hmm. or I'm being raped, or I'm whatever, right? Mm-hmm. And then you manually decide what you want to think instead. And you, like, bake it in the way that a dentist cures your filling. Like, layer by layer cure, layer by layer cure. You just bake in what you know as an adult and what you can decide in this sort of, like, completely opened up state in your brain. And you just fucking reprogram yourself. And the facilitator is, like, repeats your belief back to you. It wasn't your fault. You're a child. How could a child ever do, you know, like, and then, like, layer by layer, and then they do a closing thing to make sure that you're not walking out, like, spread open, like, mid open heart surgery. Okay, go walk in traffic.
Yeah.
the first session I ever had, my eyes were so sensitive that my therapist's office had this gray carpet with two red bars on, and it was so, like, my eyes hurt so much, which was really weird because he was tapping my knees, but the same process. It was like they were sticking out a foot and, like, beaming laser red vision into my eyes. They were so bright. And I was in such a daze that I went out and I was going to walk home or walk to a bus or something afterwards. And I went to, like, step across Richard Street and a truck was, like, right past me. And I'm like, I need to take a break. So I turned around and I went to a Blends or something like that. I think it was a coffee shop. It was a Blends.
behind those plosives.
And I, like, had a hot chocolate. And I, like, I sat it down in front of me and, like, just sat there haggard looking at it for probably about an hour and was like, can I understand hot chocolate? How do I feel about hot chocolate? And after about a year of that, he was like, okay, like,
you're done.
It's not like you're done for now. Mm-hmm. Let me know when something horrible happens to you. So I keep meaning to call him up. And that was like a long time.
Man.
It's super effective, but like anything, like, I don't think anyone would say that a root canal is a real enjoyable experience. Mm-hmm. If anyone's ever had a root canal, you feel fucked right the fuck on up after a root canal. Yeah, a few days later, you're like, okay, I can chew carrots again. Sweet. Don't.
When you describe that, I'm like, huh, what my person said EMDR was not that. Yeah.
Really? What did they say?
She just did, like, a little, and I, yeah, basically it was, like, a short, it was, like, we're gonna do 2 weeks, and I held these little vibrate-y things my hands, like, little, electric, and they go buzz, 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 and they kind of did that, but we didn't really get into, like, it was a work-related specific incident that I was trying to kind of process. And then there wasn't really any, like, it was just think about that and we're just going to, like, buzz the things.
Yeah.
There was not really replacing it with anything. There was not really, like, talking through. Anyway, I was just like, I don't think she's doing it right. Well, or it wasn't the right process for me and I didn't really like that person.
Okay. So you know,
practitioner fit is the most important thing.
Hell yes. Yeah. Most Hell important. Yes. Mm-hmm. So that it didn't, wasn't, helpful to you.
Not really, but I was just like, I'm done. Okay, fine. But then sometimes things pop up still from that.
Yeah.
That thing.
The thing that's really interesting is the process of thinking about it. I mean, so like tapping back and forth, your natural response, like a human response, is to like look to the source of the, which is why, you know, rubberneckers when there's an ambulance or a car accident or something like that, people are garbage, but also it's just a natural human response, right? Of like, look to the source.
You can't
look away, right? And so like the tapping triggers your eyes. So it's kind of like opening up that hard drive in your mind where all that stuff is stored, that filing cabinet. But it's interesting there was a different approach for you. The thing that appealed to me the most about EMDR is that I'm not a particularly fluffy person. So the idea of like lying on a fucking couch and talking about like going all Freud, I can't imagine a greater waste of my time and money and frankly emotional energy, because I don't have so much. Like, shit is busy, life is full. It's a fucking garbage storm out there. Every time you look, you know, in any media or anything like that, you're having to constantly sort through what you think all this stuff means, and to go and lie on a couch and be like, I feel sad. Let's not. I know I feel sad. Let's fucking move on. Let's do something about it. Yeah. Right? And so the active and the sort of clinical format of what I experience made a lot of sense. I'd be,
I like that.
I'd be curious to see what would happen if someone with a more formal clinical approach, if you were to have that experience.
The person that I went to was, like, much more of, like, a counselor, like, that did, like, work safe stuff.
Gotcha.
And then she's like, oh, maybe we could try this. So I don't think that she really was, like, that was her main thing. Like, I think it was like, oh, well, maybe try this flavor. And I was like, don't like it.
Tastes like licorice.
Well,
you're very weird. That's cool, though. I did it very briefly with a psychologist, but I had such a bad fit with her that it was... the EMDR was no negative part of the experience, but she was just a terrible... She was very aggressively Christian, and that wasn't like...
Boo!
Yeah. Well, I mean, have your faith or whatever, but she told me I was immoral.
That's not the space or time for
Wait, what?
Yeah, I saw... This was like back in... I want to say 2006 or 2007. It was like when I was having my little nervous breakdown. But just a little one.
Just a teen.
Just a little baby one that lasted like a whole year.
Cool. Aww, chicken little.
Chicken little. Aww. Yeah. But I want to be a pie. Oh, that's Chicken Run. Different chicken.
Yeah, and yet so similar.
So, and yet, so similar. It's like all chickens is the same.
Yeah.
But I think if I had any more traumatic experiences... then I would probably go back and do that. Because now I'm like, I'm not going to let things ferment inside of my body anymore.
No.
Not so interested.
Oh, it makes you so sick.
Yeah.
Physically, yes. Very sick. It's funny because like I've been very emotionally honest for the last few years and I haven't gotten sick like at all, pretty much.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's any connection to that, but I've just been like, oh, I'm upset.
Well, stress dampens your immune system.
That's true.
That's just real. So,
yeah. I think the other thing that's really interesting, just... not specifically speaking about spirituality, because I do think it's actually a natural human need. Like, we have to organize things in some way. And I always find around season time, everybody goes into
season
like
time.
When there's like a change of seasons.
Yeah, season change time, there's shifts and people need to find ways of organizing the changes in their body, the changes in their emotional.
You're becoming an autumn now.
Exactly.
My darling.
I'm like, ooh, spring's coming. It's horny time.
Yes.
And
very horny time.
How do we fit that into our day-to-day lives?
Yeah. And I think that, you know, like, spiritual beliefs have always been the means by which we organize that, you know, but we have options now. It's no longer sort of, like, designated. I mean, massive caveat, yes, we're still in a derivative Judeo-Christian system. Hashtag still in the system, but I think the difference is that people are choosing in their own personal lives in as much as people can within a system to choose to pursue whatever it is they want or don't want to see. So I think in a space that is a clinical space, the practitioner's spirituality has absolutely no business being there. Yeah. If it is helpful to you as a practitioner to order your own mind, fucking fill your boots, but leave the fucking boots outside. Thank you very much.
You're dreadful, gonna get crap on my carpet.
That's not cool.
She's sitting back like forever.
I would never dream of going into a clinical space and lecturing someone about being a Christian. Not in a million years. Richard Dawkins is kind of an asshole about this sort of shit, right? Yeah. You get to believe whatever you want, including nothing, but the line stops at your front door, man.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, somebody in as vulnerable a position as that makes me feel punchy.
Yeah, like, I was like, I want to say probably this was like 12 years ago, maybe. Ugh. Like, I was probably 21 or 22. It really sucked. And now I have an amazing therapist that I love. So
yes, I'm so glad you have that.
So it's good. And I like to be. I'm very proficient at talking about my feelings, and I can bullshit because of that. Because I can talk about anything, and I can just obfuscate what I'm actually there for very very easily. And
hashtag this one, stand up skills.
Yeah, and this one don't let me do it. I kept trying to like deflect when we're having a really authentic emotional experience, and I was like, can I please deflect this with humor? She's like, no. No, you can't. You have to stay in this moment. I was like, oh, I hate it. She's like, I know you do, but stick with it. But I kind of love being told what to do in a therapeutic situation like that, because often I'm just like, what do I do? And if someone's like, here's some homework, I'm like, thank you very much. May I have another?
Yeah. It's really funny. I teach singers, and there's not a counselor, but... there's some parallels there of people.
It's body work in a way.
It's physical. Yeah. And it's the idea of what is for you and what is not for you, right?
Mm-hmm.
And which body is a good body and which body is a bad body, because if the sound comes out of your body, only good bodies make good sounds and bad bodies. You know what?
Don't try to sing out of your butt.
I ask people to try to sing out of their butts because then you breathe low enough. Kristen Chenoweth says, sing out your hoo-ha.
Sing out your hoo-ha.
Sing from your hoo-ha. Seriously, look
at that. Yeah, there's like 4 inches Chenoweth, between her mouth and her hoo-ha. She's so small.
She is like a walking Bratz doll. Her head is massive because cheekbones and jawline. And then the rest of her is like 4.5 pounds. She's
a Funko Pop.
Wiry and like she's made of pure animal aggression and hairspray. And I fucking love her so much.
That's Easter from American Gods.
Oh, yes. She's so good. I was thinking about that the other day because it was just Easter.
Yes.
Yeah. But she, like, you get into a room and you try to make these funny sounds that you've never thought of before, and you're trying to make it easier, which seems like you are getting away with something, or you're not doing the work you're supposed to, or you're lazy, and that mm-hmm. means you're bad, and that means that everybody who ever thought you were bad is right, and blah, 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 blah. And not,
a spiral.
Not totally. It's an immediate spiral because you are so in touch with your body when mm-hmm. you're doing it, and I'm like, lie on the floor and breathe. And people that I love, people that I adore, have come to see me, and this is zero judgment, I completely understand and take no offense or judgment to this, lying on the floor for 15 minutes with your knees bent, a book under your head and your hands on your belly, just trying to memorize the feeling of breathing easily. People melt the fuck down.
Mm.
They lose it. And they're like, fuck this shit. I'm not doing it. Get me out of here. And it's a really interesting, very violent response to just communing and being like calling a truce with your body, right? I don't know if it was Rupi Kaur or who, I can't remember the name of the poet, but there was like a meme that was floating around for a long time and it absolutely like cut me right in my insides. I said to my body, I want to be your friend. And my body sighed and said, I've been waiting my whole life for this.
That's Rupi Kaur, yeah.
Yeah. Just this idea of calling a truce.
Mm-hmm.
Of being like, it's a good body. It is a good body. It can breathe. It gives me life. It kind of carts my ass around. Like, I just love this idea of finding places where you go and you're like, time out. We're good in here. Like, shit is fine. We're okay.
Mm-hmm.
We're okay regardless of what we look like, what our shape is, what we do in our personal life or love life or any of those sorts of things. Everything is cool. I am in 100% with my body, right? And it's a brutally difficult thing for everybody to do. Like, I think mm-hmm. it's a uniform kind of thing. And I think those, like, being at war with the self struggles, we had these ways of, like, externalizing it, of, like, making it a conversation that we had with God, or it was, like, a conversation that we had in temple, or it was like a thing at every time of the year. Mm. We would have, you know, like a day of atonement where we were like, all this horrible...
Burn the outsider and the wicker man.
Totally! Right? We had...
Not the bees!
We had things that we did that regulated and gave us a time where if we're like, I'm feeling shitty, all I have to do is wait till Yom Kippur and I can say what I really feel, mm-hmm. right? And so the secular person doesn't
Shlomo's
have...
Shlomo's gonna get it this year.
More like it's really about being open and saying I fucked up and I'm sorry, right? And the secular person, we haven't found that thing that takes that place, and people desperately need it. They have to find ways of organizing what they mean, and I think that's the misconception. God,
I love this. I'm
a
just,
lot like, of ground today, friends.
Feeling it, vibing it.
I'm so hung up on this right now. Mm-hmm. There are so many ways of looking at a secular life, and I think that the easiest one is to say that you don't believe in anything, so you believe that everything is nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not the same thing. I, as a secular person, try to make every single iota of my life meaningful because I don't have an external script to sort that shit out for me. I don't have a manual. I have the manual that is baked into my culture.
Whereas other people just have Emmanuel. Sorry.
But Dominus. But you don't have that, I don't know, I don't have that thing that I'm like, okay, it's, you know, April whatever. It's April 6th today. Today is the day that I'm supposed to pause for a second and like commune with the garden and be glad that there are greens. and there are going to be people around me sharing this cultural experience, and we can exchange information about this cultural experience that helps us understand ourselves and our culture and our community, and therefore we can decide who we are and what we mean, and we can make sense of the chaos that we feel. Instead, we have just chaos all the time and trying to figure it out. So I've been thinking strongly about trying to find the places where you get, quote, close to God, the places you can go that feel like a temple for a secular person. Because there's been a couple of centers that opened up that it's like a non-denominational reflection temple, and they're all kind of like...
just a room or whatever?
It's just like a conference room, basically. It's just like an empty, like, room at a
there's
delta.
There's a good question for us to ask ourselves is what kind of secular space feels like that to you?
Yeah.
I'm curious.
So I thought about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized the closest thing that I have is the Orpheum Theater.
Ooh!
The Orpheum Theater is the closest I have to a temple. So husband and I often purchase, like, when there's, like, packs of symphony tickets on sale, we make it, like, date night. So we choose the shows and we plan them out, and we've got, you know, like, periodic dates stretched out throughout the year. And it means that we sort of commit to doing these sorts of things. And some years it's, like, you know, there's a pack of 12 pairs or 10 pairs of tickets for a certain amount, or it's like 4 pairs of tickets or that sort of thing, or a pack of 4 and then we can buy 2. And it usually ends up, if you were to go to the movies and buy popcorn and a drink, it would be that price.
Yeah.
So right. It's like $25 basically, $25-$30.
And there's no really bad seats when you're listening to an orchestra, because it's all about just like, I actually like sitting, because they had, you know, you could get when you're a student, cheaper tickets for the Orpheum, and they'd put you right in the A section, like right at the front. And then I was like, ooh, but just as a grown-up now, like not being a student, you can get the cheap seats way in the back. I actually like that better, because then all the music is coming to you at once, instead of like you have a soloist that's in front and then it's out of sync with the rest of the orchestra. And like, so I like being in the back. And you get to see everything, and you get to see all the paintings on the ceilings.
Back there.
We don't smoke drugs at the Orpheum, Katie. Anyway, but yeah.
I'm joking. I don't smoke drugs at the Orpheum.
I don't smoke drugs ever. They make me feel bad.
Yeah, same.
Really dark bad.
Yeah. But so, sorry, I totally interrupted you.
No, that's okay. I love that. I love that. It's the closest thing I have to a temple. So when husband and I go there, we try to get there really early, as soon as the bar opens, naturally. And we grab a glass of wine, and there's always some hot person behind the concession. I don't know why they have the hottest people working. This is for you, Orpheum concession staff. God damn! And thank you.
Thank you for your service.
Thank you for your service. And it's, they're all working on living wage, so there's no tipping. I keep trying to convince them to let me tip, because I want to tip, but they're like, we're not allowed, and I'm like, still take this money. And they're like, no, and I'm like, I'm just going to hide a toonie underneath the condiments / chocolate bars. And we grab a glass of wine, and we find a different spot to sit every time. Oftentimes, we end up on the sort of walkway, so when you go into, like, the main entrance area to the Orpheum, and there's, like, the two large staircases on the side, and you can kind of, like, curl around and go in a walkway that overlooks the main entry area. I love that spot.
Yes.
Because you can see everything, but you're close enough to the ceiling that you can also see that in detail as well. And you look at it and you think, some
buddy
bunch
once
of
told me.
I'm so sorry. The world is good.
I'm so sorry.
That's okay. You can see all these, like, leaf foils on the ceiling, and you go, these have been here for a long time.
Somebody had to put those up there.
Somebody had to make those first, right? And they are irregular looking, so either they had a series of machine cuts that they made, or they had to make those things by hand. And there's, like, 10 or so leaf foils on each flower, and in each shield there's 4, I think, or 5. I spent some time looking at the ceiling here. And you think all of these bits of detail are there, and it helps the room sound the way that it sounds, but somebody had to, like, take time and pour so much love into the ceiling of this place. And it just, like, rings with, it rings with the tradition of, like, Chris, you probably can feel this. Did you do classical music?
No.
No? Okay. There's a thing about classical music that's a similar thing to, like, the military and things like that, where there's the positive side of it, which is like we have an order, there's like an agreed upon structure that we have. The bad part about that is that it's a brutally colonial blah blah blah. But classical music is getting a facelift. So there's like all of these amazing female soloists. Mm-hmm. There's all these amazing female directors coming out. You know, the audition process for the VSO has changed.
Oh, okay. Are they doing blind auditions?
They're doing blind auditions. Fucking blind auditions.
Nice.
So you just sit behind a curtain and you listen to how somebody plays, because how they play is what matters, right? Mm-hmm. And so the demographic of the symphonies are changing.
Oh, that's cool.
And so when you go, it's still classical music and there's still a lot of blue rinse in the audience. And the funding is largely by bequest. But you know what? It's adapting. It's happening. The change is happening in that community. And so as a classical kid, I can like sit in there and feel like it's my clubhouse and feel like it is my temple, but also feel like it is actually open. Because a price point has come to, like, mm-hmm. They did Paw Patrol live a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, Paw Patrol.
I was Paw like, Patrol!
I was like, who's Paw Patrol?
No, Paw Is he a Patrol. Rapper?
I'm Paw like Patrol, what I'm here
Smurfs,
to say.
Like, estranged cousin.
Yeah, exactly.
Sidebar, I knew a woman who had a, I won't name her either. I know a woman.
She doesn't listen.
She may, actually. She had a dildo named Papa Smurf for a long time.
Oh, no.
And she was demonstrating to somebody how bendy it was, and actually accidentally snapped the bar on the inside of it and, like, broke Papa Smurf.
Aww.
And so she gave it a burial. She, like, buried it in a shoebox.
Buried it in the ground and shoved it down there.
She buried it in the garbage can. But, it, like, it's the closest thing, I think, for mm-hmm. myself at least, that I can get to a temple. Like, you go there and you feel part of something bigger. And I think the part of something bigger is about humanity. And I feel part of a bigger community there. And the order and the...
like ceremony, ritual, that kind of stuff is still there.
People really need ritual. Like, spring is happening, and everybody knows that spring cleaning is a thing that sometimes happens. And it's
doing that, like, yeah, we've been doing it too. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's a natural thing to want
feels
to do.
Feels good. Mm-hmm.
And feels if you really have a good. Thing in the calendar that's like, it's the house cleaning festival, and everybody does it, and everyone does a swap, and it creates community, right?
Yes.
The secular world doesn't really have that, but I feel as though there's an opportunity. I know. I see you circling on your notepad, what's your temple? I love this idea.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I love this question.
Do you know what yours is, Chris?
Well, I was in the woods, like on the North Shore, and Ed and I both realized that it's anything by moving water is like the place that we're sort of the most peaceful. So like a lake just doesn't do it for me. But something that the constant renewal and the constant movement and then the white noise that it makes is just like the most calming.
Mm-hmm.
But like in terms of places where lots of people are gathering, like I'm just much more of a solo kid.
I'm a child. Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, so being by a river, but like everyone's walking the same paths in like the forest, right? Like, there's bridges, and there's, like, all kinds, like, it's the Capilano fish hatchery thing, and so everyone's kind of doing their own, like, walking their own little labyrinth or their own meditation, then you pass each other, and you smile, and you say hi, and there's dogs, and sometimes you wind up talking to people or not, and there's physical activity, because you're going up hills and downhill, so it's kind of like a purgy feeling, so any of those North Shore trails feel really like a spiritual experience, more so than going and walking by the ocean. The ocean's just, like, a nice place.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But, like, walking in the woods with those, like, and then they always just have the, like, shh of the river.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, like, it blanks my brain and it's really nice. So that's kind of the
it's
closest.
Like a Zen temple or something. Mm-hmm. Kind of interesting.
Because, yeah, doing, like, a labyrinth is a spiritual thing. You just walk around in circles and stuff like that and meditate a little bit. So.
Do you find that there are times of year, like, particular... Do you notice a sort of pattern in the times that either... you make time to go there or that you feel the urge to go there?
Yeah, spring and fall.
Spring and fall.
For sure.
Cool.
Yeah. Shoulder seasons.
Yeah, shoulder seasons, exactly. And so, like, fall is for the fishing ritual, though, too, because the salmon are coming in that time. So we do a lot more, like, we walk through the woods and then scrabble down to the actual, like, shore. But in the spring, it's just walking and, like, looking for trails that we can then scrabble down in the fall.
That's awesome. That's awesome. What you, Katie?
Scribble, scrabble.
Well, I think I have a couple answers. One of them being, like, the social aspect of what church was like for me. Because I went fairly actively in my teen years, and I went to, like, Bible camp and stuff. I don't come from a religious family. It was just, I don't know, it was an impulse that I followed. I was looking for community very strongly. I didn't really have any. I was very lonely, and I had one friend who went to church regularly and took me to youth group. And that was really cool. I got a lot of really good stuff out of that in my life, like as negative as sort of oppressive Baptist Christianity is. The community part was something that I really took away from that. And so the place that I feel that now, and it is not every single time I go to do it, but like whenever I'm doing a comedy show and I'm like in a backstage area with other people, like when I'm in a place that only performers get to be, feels like a little bit like temple to me, because there's other people there, and we're all like, we all have the same level of clearance, and I always feel like I'm getting away with something a little bit, like I'm, like there is something having sort access. Of a little bit of sacredness to the space, and to be part of, like, to know that you are different than other people that are in the same building, because you're in like a different room and you're all together with all those people. Maybe that's makes me feel like a cardinal or something like that. But it's like this idea of togetherness and like we're here because we chose to be, and we're here because we're the ones taking a risk, kind of. So so that's something that feels very like I don't know, like being on a secret council or something like that is sort of fun. And we all do our own things, but we come together and we like gossip and talk about stuff, and it's fun. I really like it. Of course that can be toxic too, but that's same with temples. So there you go. But for me, like it's not a singular place, you know, like there are definitely places I walk into, like when I walk into the Vancouver Library, I definitely feel a sense of awe. Just because, number one, the architecture is beautiful.
Goddamn right it is.
Number two, it is just very physically intimidating architecture. Like, it's very much like it looms. But it also wombs. Like, it's kind of scoops you in a little bit.
I love that!
So it's
looms and wombs.
There's something very all-encompassing about it. And so whenever I walk in there, I feel very, like, astounded. It is also the first place I ever met my wife. So there is definitely, the Vancouver Library has a special, but it's just the entranceway. It's not necessarily the library itself. The library itself is, of course, like, it's so full of books, so that feels special. So libraries in general,
yeah,
but...
Yeah, libraries are really nice. I get to go to the legislative library, and that's like...
There's so much wood!
So many lamps!
Yeah.
Oh, God!
Yeah, and like, and they're all green lamps with like the green glass and the brass. Oh, it's good.
Sidebar, I'm so sorry I'm interrupting. No. My husband...
Did you know I have a husband?
I know! Could I please talk about him some more? He loves the lamp more than me. Like, he loves the lamp on such a deep, fundamental level, because it's in every movie, and you know you're watching a movie when the lamp is there. I bought him a lamp one time for his birthday, and or maybe Christmas or something, and he was like...
like the green lamp.
The lamp! There's only one. It's the lamp.
It's the lamp that any guy who's, like, trying to come up with, like, equations in the 1940s is using on his desk.
Yeah, the banker's lamp.
It's me, Irving, and I'm doing equations.
Yeah.
Here's my lamp. It's the lamp.
Legit, we'll be in a theater... And we're good theater goers. We don't talk. We don't make noise
but when
or anything
you see
like
that lamp.
He sees a lamp and he like clutches my arm. And he's like, he's so excited.
It's like looking for the Wilhelm scream or something.
Oh, right. I hear it all the time. I hear that. I'm totally
no, derailing. This is how a podcast goes.
It is self-indulgent. You must indulge yourself.
I hear repeated Foley and it drives me crazy. I can't even imagine what, you know, like these awesome sound designers and stuff like that. I hear the Wilhelm scream all the time, and I hear that piece of Foley. I'm sorry, everyone listening, I'm about to ruin movies for you. Buckle up! whenever anyone opens a door, particularly if it's a dungeon door, it sounds like... The second I hear it, I'm like, did everyone just get the same 24-track sound effect CD from KTEL or something?
There is only one dolphin sound that exists.
Yeah.
And it's the same one.
It totally is.
It's like the dolphin Wilhelm scream,
yeah,
basically.
It really is.
And the same breaking glass sound. So that's my favorite thing that happens. Yeah, that is what it sounds like. Yeah. That's my favorite thing in a movie, is when somebody throws something that is not glass and it makes that noise. And it's just very much just like breaking the fourth wall in like a silly comedy film. That's like one of my favorite things. Oh, and I, okay, so yes. Temples, I have one more thing, which is just
when I am in a strange city by myself and I'm alone, and I can go anywhere, do anything I want, that feels holy to me. Because it's like putting a total amount of faith in myself to just decide how the day is going to go and be totally responsible for that and see something new. And just like the experience of seeing a new place on my own is really spiritual for me. Mm-hmm. So there you go. Those are my things.
There's a really interesting part of all of these places that I think is maybe the thing, which is larger than you.
Mm-hmm.
You're in the woods and you're surrounded by this like awe-striking.
And I was thinking about the woods thing too. It's that somebody actually like made and maintains all those trails and stuff.
Okay.
So it's not just walking in the woods on like a random, but like going on trails, and you go on trail hikes or trail walks. You know, you do the Coho Loop.
Yeah.
Is the meditation.
And it's like, this is for you.
Yeah. And, like, or you do, like, yeah, all these different trails. Like, so in Gibson's, where I grew up, there's Cliff Gilker Park. And so it's like, yeah, you take the...
I'm sorry, what?
Cliff Gilker Park.
The Cliff Gilker.
And
it sounds like the sound
German
food. When you get a little bit of soda, like, down the wrong pipe.
No, it sounds like a Dutch delicacy.
But, you know, it's like, you take the red trail, or you take the blue trail, or you take the green one, and, like, you follow that path, and then it brings you back to the parking lot at the end, and all of them do. They're all different loops. I think I like that. Where it is actually somebody built that. And so that kind of goes into the cathedral thing or the library thing or the Orpheum, like, where, someone's taken the time to, like, craft this thing that you then all experience together.
A prepared environment.
Mm-hmm.
A prepared space designated for that purpose.
Yeah.
You get permission to go there and ask the big questions. You're like, we don't... Do you remember the idea that you're not supposed to talk about religion or politics at the table?
Or money or sex.
Or money or sex at the table, right?
Yes.
The idea that there are spaces for those conversations and spaces that you're not supposed to have those conversations. Number one, no. Number two, come on, we're all going to die. Let's just get the shit out in the open.
Yeah.
But
we are?
I know, right? Spoiler alert!
Sorry.
But, no sorries.
I don't want to
die.
It's okay.
But I think the thing that is really interesting is that these spaces are the place where you're like, you take down the walls and you go, oh my God, what am I going to do? You know, you're allowed to be small. We're not supposed to be small, and we are fucking infinitesimal, right? Barely registering as blips. So the idea of being able to walk into a room and go, this is way fucking bigger than you, except it's for you. You're recognized, yet shown how small you are, but it's totally okay. And you're
blowing Katie's noggin here.
You're allowed to
have this hat on. It's keeping it all in.
I know, your brain matter. We need that shit, man.
It's gonna mess up this room real bad if it explodes.
You can't get the gray matter of the upholstery.
It'll be so expensive to dry cleaning.
Dry cleaning, the baffling. I don't know. I think that that's why people listen to music. It's why people make music and all those sorts of things. But we can kind of, like, keep it at arm's length. We can, like, be cool and go to a live music venue and, like, be in the dark and hide from people. Although maybe that is some people's temple. Maybe that's where they feel designated connection time.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel when you go into a cathedral or something like that, like, I was really interested in religion when I was younger as well. And I never really went to temple, but one of my oldest and most dear, most just cherished friends, her family is Jewish, and we lived together a few times. And during the courses of time when we were living together, and from the time I was really little, I was always fascinated by Judaism. And I think it's because I read a book called All of a Kind Family. And it was like this family of like all these kids and all these people, and they just seemed like this functional, loving, idyllic, open family to me, which I was like, I like really envied that picture that I saw in the book, whatever that thing was in my mind that I thought it was. And so when I lived with her and her family, we would celebrate high holidays. And like this book, All of a Kind Family, they were a Jewish family as well. And so it was the sort of thing where Judaism always made sense to me, because everyone that I knew that was practicing Judaism was like reform or more liberal, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so when they were practicing, it was like, no. This isn't like a literal how-to manual. We know these are all stories. We exercise the need that we have to punctuate the passage of life through allegory. We know this shit is allegory. Do we think that there was lamp oil, blah, 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 blah? that's what the book says. Do we think that really happened? Probably not. But is it a nice story that helps us think about things that we're struggling with in our life? Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's take it for what it is. It's a story written in a book. Let's fucking eat, right? And it made so much sense to me of going into something with your eyes open and being like, a burning bush? We're going to be excited. This is dangerous territory. My favorite Bible story is the pettiest one, where Jesus gets pissed off that the bush won't give him fruit, and he sets it on fire!
He curses a fig tree.
He's fucking
fig tree! I'm so hungry! God damn it!
Listen,
Dad damn it!
Yeah, Dad damn it! Right? So, like, this idea that it all has to be so literal, that's not the point. The point is for it to not be literal. The point is for you to be able to see yourself in it and for the allegory to be presented that way. And so the idea of going to temple always made so much sense to me, because you're not going there necessarily, strictly speaking, to be with God. I mean, for some people, they are there with God. They they are there to be with capital G-O-D. But for a lot of people, I know somebody who converted to Judaism, and as she was converting, she was like, I don't really believe in God. Is that a problem? And the rabbi was like, do you know, are you joining a family? Are you going to
live? The most Jewish syllable, too.
This is how she reports the story. But she's like, I'm there to like live a life with my family, and my family are all Jewish and I'm not, or my family that I'm about to have are all going to be Jewish and I'm not, and I want to convert because I want us to like keep this spirituality alive and this part of life alive. And the rabbi was like, do you, as long as like you're contributing good things to the community and you're participating in a way that builds community instead of like ripping it out from the inside, go for it, fill your boots, right? Nice. And so the idea of it being a realist pursuit, like when I was growing up, I dated Christians. I only ever dated Christians because I was attracted to conviction, whatever that conviction was, right? Mm-hmm. People with strong beliefs, people with passion. I was like, that is magnetic. You're dumping me because I won't convert. And you were cool with the makeouts. Not naming any names, you motherfuckers. Crushing my little high school heart.
Joshua and Ezekiel.
Not going to name any names. But, the conviction part of it was magnetic. It's like, I get it. I completely understand. I feel like we need these things, and secular people don't have these organized, it's not about organized faith, it's about organized psychological organization, right? The manual refiling in your life of where all your experiences go. And like, that's EMDR, right? That's why we go to therapy, is why we do all those things. We want to make, I don't know, we want to organize this shit. We want to figure out what it's all about. I go to the Orpheum, man, and I look up at the ceiling and I try to find little passageways and little seating areas that I've never been to before. And I listen to this like low, warm hum, because the Orpheum sounds like $1 million. And I think about how people must have felt going into temples when temples were first built. You're this tiny speck of a person in this massive auditory acoustic phenomenon, built by people, designed to capture God in amber and let you look at it, right? What a fucking fantastic idea. I understand why people would get so affected in a space like that, and why they would feel so close to it, And for the secular person, I think it's really important to find those spaces, because otherwise you just feel a little bit like flotsam, or at least I do. I feel a little bit like flotsam. I need to find ways to, like, make sense of it, even if the sense of it is that it's just a feeling and it's okay and it's going to pass, or that it can serve me in some way or serve my loved ones in some way. I just want to find a way of getting closer to small G-O-D. Quote G-O-D, end quote.
That made my heart really happy.
Me too. What a great episode. Brad, do you have anything you want to promote? You want to flog that pony?
I want to flog that pony. Well,
if people want to take lessons with you or stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I would.
I do.
I would. look me up. I would love people.
I'm looking at you.
Look me on. Look at and on. I would love people to do two things. One, I would love people to sing along more to the radio. And if they want a little bit of help as to how to be stronger voiced and feel more awesome, look me up. I can never remember my own website. VancouverSingingTeacher.com. Vancouver Singing Lessons. I can't remember. But if you look up redheartbreaker.com, it'll redirect you to places. Redheartbreaker.com. The other thing I would love you to do, if you are a filmmaker, is I want you to get in touch with me about your movies. Because I am very excited to say that I have been signed to an agency this year for film composing at the beginning of the year. It's super awesome. Core Music Agency, my agent Ari Wise and Matt Safran are fucking awesome. Delightful, loving, warm, kind gentlemen. And I love them to bits. They do awesome work helping me get wicked jobs, but I also want to keep an interesting influx of independent projects coming as well. So, Core Music Agency, redheartbreaker.com. Come check me out, even just to say hi. Just come say hi.
Little online wave.
Let's use the internet for good for once in our goddamn lives. And
no.
Say hello.
I'm no. Go put toxic shit out there again.
Yay!
I'm bad. I'm on at the Foxhole on Wednesday. I got bumped from last week, so I'm on this Wednesday, 9 o'clock at the Foxhole above the Fox Theater on Main Street.
Sweet.
Nice.
It'll be fun.
I have nothing to promote.
Just your face.
Yeah.
It's good.
Get engaged in politics. That's what I can promote to people.
Yay!
Yay!
Don't forget to vote and things.
Yes.
Okay.
Take part. There's a lot of, actually, there's a lot of really interesting town hall meetings and a lot of municipal engagement at the Juno's Week this couple weeks ago. There was a really great full day set of workshops by Sound Diplomacy and Creative Cities. They were talking about ways of, you know, making music and making the arts, but specifically music, more baked into how we interact on a municipal and political level.
Mm-hmm.
And there were some really great observations from folks who do the same work in Seattle and Portland and a couple of other places, talking about, you know, folding policies that benefit live music venues and musicians into things like real estate development and into zoning and things like that. So there's a lot of really interesting town hall meetings coming up, both because of that and some of the sort of neighborhoods that are getting heavily gentrified at the moment. They're having a lot of town halls. So go to the City of Vancouver website, follow them on Instagram and Twitter, and go to some of those meetings. Weirdly, they do actually listen to you if you go and sit in the room.
Definitely do, yeah.
I can't say enough good things about Heather Deal. She was in the room at this talk, and she was telling us about some of the things that she was doing and some of the arguments that she's making on behalf of the music community. And, you know, Bob Deeth was there as well, and he's now, you know, he's an MLA, right? MLA?
Yes.
And he is, you know, doing the thing. So call him up. Call them up. Get in their face. Tell them to do things.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Great.